to chapter 4, your nervous system can't tell the difference between imagination and reality, from how to make your thoughts disappear. In this chapter, I will share with you my secret weapon, the secret weapon that I've been using for years to help control change in behavior. It's perhaps one of the most powerful concepts I've ever used to change other people's behavior and certainly my own behavior as well. It's an in-depth understanding of the human body's nervous system. It is said that the nervous system can't tell the difference between imagination and reality. This is so very true about the peripheral nervous system. Of course, the central nervous system can tell the difference because the main part of the central nervous system is your brain. Understanding this one concept and learning how to apply it in your daily life is a real game changer. It's certainly done it for me. Let's take some more time to understand this. When we create a thought, we often create a picture in our minds to accompany that thought without even realizing we're doing it. Have you ever had a thought that was a negative assumption about a situation or a person, and you continued down that path just carrying on about the subject? Well, if the subject was negative, I'm sure many things started to happen with your body. Your heart rate may have increased, your palms might have started sweating, and your blood pressure might have increased. Your anxiety level could have also increased. You may have gotten angry, and all of this happened because you started with a negative story or a negative thought. As you started thinking about the story, your nervous system couldn't tell the difference between imagination and reality. So your mind took over, and your emotions let themselves to becoming so vivid, it felt real. Then, what often happens when you find out your assumptions weren't true? Well, in time, your heart starts to slow down, and you become calmer again. It's no different than if I told you to imagine my fingernails are long and I've scratched them across a dry chalkboard. Though there really is no chalkboard, most people would react by cringing or with some similar body movement because just thinking about the fingernail scratching against a dry chalkboard creates a response. The reason? The nervous system can't tell the difference between imagination and reality. I want you to become a master at controlling your nervous system. Let me go a bit overboard with an example. Let's imagine we're talking with someone who doesn't know how to swim. We're with them at a very large swimming pool. We tell them we're going to throw them into the middle of the pool, and their goal will be to save themselves from drowning. They will have no flotation device and nothing else to grab onto. Just the mere thought of something like this to someone who does not swim would emotionally cripple them, bringing them to sheer panic. But I only placed a simple thought in their mind. The nervous system can't tell the difference between imagination and reality. Just the thought of being thrown into a swimming pool takes control of every cell in their body. I could just be kidding, simply mentioning this idea to them without any intentions of throwing them into the pool. If that person could learn to both consciously and consistently be aware of how to take control of their life instead of allowing their thoughts to negatively engage their nervous system, they would be able to make drastic and dramatic changes. Now, stay with me on this. I could take that person, if they were willing, and just by showing them how to train their nervous system so they could respond positively, they could be thrown into the pool and still save their own life. And I understand this book isn't a manual on learning how to swim, but I want you to see the depths of how powerful so much of this is and how it can be so beneficial in so many areas of life. I'm primarily sharing these principles with you so you can apply them in all areas of life. People don't often drown because they can't swim. They drown because they panic. Similarly, people don't die because they choke on food. They die because when the food gets lodged in their throat, they immediately panic, which instantly causes them to suck in more air through their mouth, thus lodging the food further down their throat, rather than being totally and instantly aware of their problem and simply breathing through their nose. I could train a person who doesn't know how to swim to not panic by training or programming their nervous system to respond appropriately. Then I could teach them, once they're thrown into the pool, to simply sink to the bottom bend their knees, and when they touch the bottom, forcefully explode upward, back toward the surface. Once above the surface, they would take in more air and return to the bottom of the pool. Do it again several more times if necessary until they get to the shallow end of the pool. Now stop for a moment and think about how many times you lose some kind of control because you're not mentally in a place of total awareness. Someone pushes in front of you in a line at a store, or you respond maybe negatively toward that. Someone else looks at you wrong or in a wrong way, and again, you respond in a negative manner. While someone else is driving down the road, they see a small spider inside their car, and they lose total control and end up having an accident. Things happen like this every day. Much of this negative programming happens when we're really not even paying attention and we don't even notice it. Here's an example of this. Let's say that you and I are watching TV one night, and we have a 2-year-old child watching with us. All three of us are watching a show about the forest, and as we are watching the TV screen, in the forest, we see a huge snake sliding along the ground, and shortly afterward, the 2-year-old is put to bed. Several hours later, we end up frantically running to the child's room because he is screaming at the top of his lungs after a nightmare. The child doesn't understand and isn't old enough to communicate what happened and why he was screaming, so we'll never know about the nightmare. Now, if we were able to watch the dream or nightmare that caused the child to scream so loudly, we would probably notice the child was dreaming about the snake that he had seen on TV before going to bed. But now, in his dreams, the snake has wrapped itself around the boy and started to swallow him. The imagination or the dream was so real, at that very moment, the child woke up screaming. Now, I can assure you at this point, and in most cases, this child will now be phobic about snakes for the rest of his life and may not know what happened or why, and even remember how he became phobic. So 3 months later or 3 years later, the child sees a snake either on TV or in real life, and now instantly, without even thinking about it, he gets a flashback to the nightmare and totally freaks out. As the parents, we have no idea why the child responded so negatively about the snake. We just now associate that my child is afraid of snakes. What actually happened was that dream, associated with such strong emotion, though it wasn't real, instilled a negative feeling towards snakes. The younger we are, the less we understand how to control our nervous system and how to avoid negative reactions, which aren't good options. There is an emotional and mental danger here for the child. Every time he sees or thinks of a snake, because the nervous system can't tell the difference between imagination and reality, the fear digs its grave deeper and deeper until it is ingrained as a phobia of snakes. His brain is now wired to validate and reemphasize this belief or story about why he should validate his phobia. This lack of control is in nearly everything that we do. Take, for example, the parent who disciplines their child and the way they execute the punishment. With all the constant traveling that I've been doing, I have overheard many an argument through the hollow doors and walls of some hotels, and you'll find many parents discipline their children out of their own anger. This is why many parents use the counting method. That's really a sign of their own weakness and inability to control their own emotions. The scenario goes like this: if you don't clean up your room now, 1, 2, 2.5, then the child finally moves into action. And technically, the child moves into action because the parent is actually programming the child to believe not to listen to the parent on the first request, but wait until the parent almost counts to 3. Often the reason a parent can't just administer discipline upon the first request is that they're not angry enough. It seems many parents wait to become angry at the child. This in turn allows the parent in their own mind to justify yelling or raising their voice or losing their temper. Whereas if they had just used more control, if the child didn't listen to them on the first request with a still heart, they could still administer the discipline or the consequences of not obeying. For many people, due to their lack of control, it seems extremely counterintuitive to administer discipline to a child or a coworker with a calm heart or a still heart. Doing so takes a tremendous amount of self-control and self-awareness. I mean, think about it. It's not easy to administer some kind of discipline when you're calm. It's as if we tell ourselves, wait, let me get a bit angrier so I feel justified in laying out the consequences of your behavior. When you become more aware of your level of importance, it will suppress the weak mind that tells you that you must feel anger to administer discipline. These are just a few of many examples of how not understanding awareness and not understanding how to take better control of our nervous system actually ends up controlling us. In our next chapter, I will begin to give you more wax-on, wax-off examples and exercises so you can begin to practice how to make your thoughts disappear. See, we tend to forget, if we're even aware, of how important a role our nervous system plays in our lives for either good or bad. And when something negative happens to us, and if we get caught up in the negative emotion of the situation, we are likely to start reacting in a negative way. That's just the way we're wired. Then the nervous system gets a negative charge. Your negative emotions will then build more and more. It's no different than the person who is phobic of a snake, and every time they think of a snake, they dig or ingrain the phobia deeper and deeper, negatively training their nervous system. Then they allow that fear to continue to fire off more negative emotions, feelings, and unhelpful and inappropriate reactions. A person must be aware the moment this begins to happen. I'm often asked, how do we stop this from happening? My simple response is, how do you start it? Now, do the opposite of your answer. I'll continue to use the snake example. The more phobic or afraid of something a person is, the deeper and faster they keep ingraining the problem. Another scenario would involve the person who is phobic of a snake. At some point, they are totally calm, and when you start talking about a snake, instantly that paints a picture in their mind, and usually the first thing they do to reward that feeling is to change their breathing pattern, which often leads to increased heart rate. The snowball will then begin rolling downhill unless they first force the change of their breathing pattern. You have many opportunities all day long to learn to master this technique. Here's one of mine. With so much traveling in so many different cities, I have no idea what the speed limits are on each road that I travel. And I recently was pulled over by a local police officer, and you know that feeling, right? I instantly stopped it from controlling me, and here's how I did that. I saw the lights from the police car, and for most of us, that is immediately associated with a trouble, gut-wrenching feeling, and an immediate change in breathing pattern. The very moment I saw the light, I instantly and quickly filled my lungs with air through my nose, thus immediately breaking the pattern of where I was about to go, the faster heart rate, the nervous anxiety, and so on. And then very slowly, I breathed out again through my nose, slowly letting it out. I have such a heightened awareness all of the time of my surroundings, my breathing, my thoughts, and my emotions, that once I see that light from a police vehicle, I consciously adjust my breathing pattern in a matter of seconds. Now, for some people, this might seem trivial, but stop and think about how many times in a day we could let external stimuli or external circumstances control us. This awareness gives us more control of how we choose to respond to things and offers us a better life. It's this kind of awareness that you need to work on that will get you prepped to make your thoughts disappear. Continuing with the example of being pulled over, some people talk about it for days after it happens. Then they make excuses for getting caught. And if they can't afford to pay the ticket, they dig their emotional grave even deeper by complaining about the government and society in general. Some people have to go get a drink because they're so upset. And with my example of being totally aware and responding immediately, I accept the ticket and go about my merry way. Not only did I control the emotional side of the response, it also slowed down or stopped the other negative snowball responses, making my day a better one in spite of the ticket. How many negative snowballs do you experience in a normal day that you don't catch in time to stop? If we're not aware and don't stop the snowball effect, with the example of a person having a phobic response to a snake, then next will be an increased heart rate and perhaps screaming or running like a crazy person. At that point, all your negative emotions have kicked in, and they have just ingrained the phobia deeper into your nervous system. In the worst case scenario, the phobic person is now 100% totally out of control. Something else of which that person is not even aware, the phobia has now taken total control of their emotions. Most people respond with similar patterns in other areas of their life on a day-to-day basis. It doesn't have to be related to a phobia. It could be the thought of someone disliking you, which ingrains a dislike and disrupts your emotions more. It could be the memory of a lost one or some other thought of your past. What negative thoughts or experiences do you have that the moment you start thinking about them, you end up racing down that negative road? When you ingrain the negative emotion, you make it worse. Unless you stop along the trail and learn to release the negative emotion or at least change the meaning of it. This is not to say you cannot or you should not think about the loss of a loved one from your past, but you can still learn to have the thought and respond in a more positive manner and emotionally and healthier way. I remember once flying on a commercial plane, and we were about to take off when I looked over and looked at a lady sitting beside me. And as I looked over at her, I could tell she was afraid. She tightened, just really tightly grabbed the armrest. And she actually lost awareness the moment she did that. We both knew that grabbing the armrest couldn't change anything for the better. Subconsciously, due to her lack of awareness, she had just told herself, "I'm freaked out, let me prove it to you. Watch me grab the armrest as if I'm about to rip them off the seats and carry off the airplane." Now that immediate reaction kicked in the nervous system and continued to make matters worse. The snowball effect continued, and in her mind, her flying experience had been ruined while the four-year-old behind her was dying to get out of the seat and get out of the seatbelt so they could be more amazed by the view from the windows when they were looking at everything because they were so small because of the altitude that we were at. When I go up in an airplane with people who have either little or a large fear of flying, I will notice they often hold onto the strap attached to the inside cabin that is designed to help them pull out of the seat to stand. And once they grab the strap, I will say to them, "Holding that strap doesn't make the fear go away." I tap their hand in an effort to help them let it go. The moment they do, they start taking control, whether they realize it or not. One of the things that I do at my seminars is to take a person from the audience who's extremely phobic, bring them on stage, and use a process I've developed to reverse their phobia in minutes. How? My secret weapon. I retrain their central nervous system to use some of the methods that I've already shared with you in this chapter. You don't have to confront your fears. That's a myth. I often hear people say something like, "If you want to get over your fears, you have to confront them." This is not necessarily true. When a person is truly phobic of something, just the mention of whatever their phobic is will create a negative response throughout their body. So if they continue to think about whatever it is they are afraid of, the negative responses in them magnify. Then the nervous system kicks in, which in turn increases their heart rate, causes their palms to sweat, and then by the time they even get close to the real thing, their phobia is stronger and they're totally freaked out. With the proper training, this person could learn to reprogram their reactions and thought processes just by understanding their nervous system better. Before they get to the focal point of their phobia, they would no longer have a negative reaction as they did previously. Technically, it would no longer be considered a fear, let alone a phobia. This is extremely powerful. Essentially, the fear was removed before they confronted what it was they were originally afraid of. So remember, you can learn to reprogram your reactions and thought processes just by understanding your nervous system better. Now, many times during my events, when there are people who struggle with some phobia, they'll watch from the audience as I rewire or transform somebody on stage away from their phobia. Then after the presentation, they'll usually search me out and express how before they came to the program, they were phobic of something specific, but now after watching this demonstration, their phobia is gone. This means they can now go up to whatever it is they were phobic of, and technically, they're really not confronting the fear because the fear has already been removed. That's extremely powerful. I share this with you because to begin mastering and making your thoughts disappear, it requires total awareness of your thoughts, your feelings, and your surroundings. And if you're not aware of your day-to-day emotions and some of the things that you can do to change them, you'll never be able to make your thoughts disappear or even close to controlling them. I need to continue to emphasize the importance of not giving up because we're getting close to the specific exercises. Again, I believe this concept is so new to some that many people can't even consider appreciating the benefits of mastering it. Now, as you begin making this a way of life, it becomes easier and easier. I've been at this for years. You will not master it right away, and in time, you can become so conditioned to doing this on your own that you will program yourself, for example, at night just to fall asleep without consciously going through the exercises. It quickly becomes a habit, a good habit. Just last night, I was lying down and meditating before going to sleep, realizing I needed to get up early to continue to write this chapter for you. I started the first few steps of making my thoughts disappear. I don't even remember finishing the process. I was out like a light and slept like a snoring baby. It has become a natural part of my nightly behavioral pattern. For me, most of the time, I wake up feeling so rested that my daily slate is wiped clean, ready to paint a new canvas each day. I start each day without being pestered by the problems of yesterday. I like that feeling. It's another reason I made sure I learned to master this technique. By following the exercises in this book, you'll take your awareness to a totally new level, and I hope just this chapter alone helps you understand more about your nervous system and helps you become more aware of how you let your negative thoughts and bad circumstances get worse by digging your emotional grave deeper. Stop that from happening. Continue reading, or in this case, continue listening, right?
This concludes this chapter of How to Make Your Thoughts Disappear by Gary Cox.